Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. Sometimes life is funny. Books come along just at the right time, just when you need them. So I'm just waiting now for an author whose book, this is going to be a wonderful conversation because everything about this book I love. I'm happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Don Bentley, a New York Times bestselling author of Tom Clancy, Target Acquired, and the author of this wonderful new book called Hostile Intent, the third in the Matt Drake series. Hi, Don.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me today.
Whoa, what a timely book. When you put this book to bed, what, about a year ago, year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Did you expect you would be talking about it in the middle of a war in Ukraine?
No, I did not. And so what you're alluding to is Hostile Intent is the third book in my series. And the first two focus very much on Middle East and Middle East threats. And so what I wanted to do for Hostile Intent is set the book in Europe and write a bigger book. And the way I wanted to write a bigger book was to show what a Russian invasion of Ukraine would look like. And it has been surreal and heartbreaking at the same time to see a lot of the things that I wrote about fictitiously now come to fruition almost a year later.
It's like, oh my gosh, were they reading your book? It is amazing. I just want to tell everybody that, of course, you are a former FBI special agent, a SWAT team member, and an Army Apache helicopter pilot. So this, I mean, this war, does it blow your mind?
Yeah, it really does. And it's, you know, from a Apache helicopter perspective, my first assignment out of flight school was in Korea. And in the Korean Peninsula, the Apaches do a mission, and that's called a deep attack, where you actually practice to go into North Korea, and your job is to intercept big columns of North Korean armored vehicles moving south towards South Korea. And so there were a lot of memes going around about from my Apache pilot friends when that infamous Russian armored column was stretching out for 20 or 40 something odd miles, and thinking, man, if we had a squadron of Apaches, we could go to town on that sucker.
That's what I was thinking too. I was thinking, oh boy. Now my husband was also a pilot, and so I tend to look at things from the pilot's point of view. So it was sort of breathtaking to see what the Ukrainians were able to do with those tanks.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to compliment you, Patsy, on waiting until now to tell me that your husband was a pilot, because if he was here, he would have worked it in the first sentence or two, because that's what pilots do. And so I appreciate you having enough restraint to wait until now. But yeah, absolutely, the thing in writing Hostile Intent, there's certainly some things I got right in the book, but the biggest miss I had that I think most of the world had was I underestimated the ferocity and bravery that the Ukrainian people have showed in resisting the Russian invasion. And so one of the points of view characters in my book is a Ukrainian militia that's frantically trying to acquire a nuclear weapon to stop the Russian invasion. But man, when you see this now and you see everything from, you know, women and men and people who are accountants and teachers and engineers learning how to make Molotov cocktails to throw at Russian vehicles, you know, the sheer bravery and audacity of that just takes your breath away.
Yes, it did come as a surprise to a lot of the world. Of course, for me, why I first fell in love with this book is that it starts after a few chapters, it goes to Vienna. And I spent a great deal of time in Vienna. So it brought back a lot of fond memories for me of Vienna.
Yeah.
And just the thought of the goulash. Don't you love Vienna?
Yeah, I got to. So as in the Army, my last assignment was in Germany. I got to spend 3 years in Germany, which is phenomenal. And as a part of that, we tried to travel as much as we could. And I actually got to run a marathon in Vienna. So it's such a beautiful city. It's so European with the cobblestone streets and everything that you hear about Vienna, the chocolate, the coffee, the music is true. But what I thought that was super interesting that I didn't know at the time and kind of learned later is Vienna also has a second name. So instead of the city of music, it's also called the city of spies. And there's this urban legend that at any one point there are 7,000 spies walking the streets of Vienna plying their craft. And so it was this interesting dynamic in the Cold War where it was kind of ground zero for East meets West and kind of crawling with folks practicing espionage. And I'm like, man, I gotta pull that into this book and use that as well. And so, as you said, my protagonist, Matt Drake, gets to go to Vienna to meet with a former asset of his. And then, as things do in these kind of books, his operation goes off the rails fast. So, but it was a joy spending time in Vienna.
For me, just the memories of sitting there and ordering coffee, mit Schlag. It's like, it was a fond memory. Of course, love Matt Drake. I think he has to be like one of the very, very top in this whole sort of terrorist espionage. There's nobody better than him. And I love actually that it starts off talking about guns, because I'm somebody who slept for 30 years with an Uzi under my bed. So I appreciate books where they're talking about guns. I get such a kick out of it. So I was really thrilled with this first chapter. Tell us a little bit about Matt Drake, where he is at this point in the series, because he's married, and tell us about him. I love him. He's a wonderful character.
Thank you so much. When I came to this genre, my editor's a guy named Tom Colgan, and he has edited everybody from Tom Clancy when he was still alive to Janet Ivanovich and now Mark Greene. And so Tom said, you know, as a new writer coming to this genre, you have to do something that's the same but different. And so the same in that your book should be shelved next to Brad Taylor's, and people will say, yeah, it belongs in this genre, but different because Brad writes a pretty good Brad Taylor book, and I'm never going to be him, so what am I going to do that's different? And so for me, that really took a form of two things, and I say that heart and humor are what drive my writing. And so what's been a huge influence on me was Nelson DeMille's John Corey series, where he just has this witty, really funny first-person protagonist, and I remember reading his first book with that character that was called Plum Island, and I got done and I was like, I would read a book about that guy going grocery shopping because he's so much fun to be with. And at the same time, the people I know who could be Matt Drake often have a sense of humor, because it's the way that gallows humor is how you deal with the incredible stressful points of your life that are your normal vocation. And so I wanted to include that. And so Matt is a very witty character that pokes fun of himself a lot, and then at the same time, the heart aspect of it is twofold. And so number one, Matt is madly in love with his wife, and that was another aspect of real life. The people I know who do this for a living have families and wives that they love that serve as a counterpoint to the crazy world that's their daily life. It's kind of an anchor for them back to reality. And there aren't too many books in this genre that show that, and so I wanted to show that aspect of Matt and his wife, Lila. And then the third part of that heart is that when you're in the military, there's this amazing dynamic that people from all backgrounds, all walks of life, all races, all genders come together in a melting pot. And oftentimes that melting pot is augmented by the crucible of combat. And you come out of the other side as brothers and sisters. And two people that should have nothing in common are now brothers for life. And so in Matt's case, that plays out, and his best friend is a guy who goes by his call sign of Frodo, who was a former Delta Force operator who was grievously hurt in a mission that you can read about in Without Sanction, and that is Matt's best friend that he loves more than a brother. And so I really wanted to bring those aspects of heart and humor to the genre through this book, and hopefully that resonates with people as it did with you.
Oh, it does. It's so funny that you mention Nelson DeMille. He's been a guest on my program. But when I met my husband, he was reading By the Rivers of Babylon, a book that you can reread a couple of times.
I think that might have even been Nelson DeMille's debut. Another thing that he brings, I think, that's so important is Nelson DeMille was a Vietnam War veteran, was a cavalry commander. I was actually an air cavalry commander. I got to meet him once at Thriller Fest and was an incredibly suave and debonair, and I think I couldn't even remember my own name, and I'm just like, I love you, Nelson. So hopefully he forgives me that, but he's a fantastic writer and a huge influence on my writing.
And it shows, actually. I recognize so many thriller writers have been on my program, and you're right. I think you've set yourself apart in a way, because I love this humor. I think it's, you know, when you're under all this stress of all of these assignments, the danger, to have this, this element of fun and the element of of a loving relationship, I think is great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really, you know, I think the best fiction, no matter what genre, is character driven. Brad Taylor told me once, you know, people come for the story, but they come back for the characters. And so if you can give something to people, you know, one of my other favorite writers is Daniel Silva, and he has such intricately drawn characters that when I pick up his new book for that year, it feels like I'm coming home to a bunch of friends. And so that's what I would love for people when they read Hostile Intent, is to get to know Matt and his merry band of misfits, and then say, man, I want to come back and see those guys again.
I think you've accomplished it. And of course, now when you were there, you went to the Ukraine, so you understood. I spent a lot of time in Europe, so I understood the importance of Ukraine. And it's so surprising how many Americans had no idea where the Ukraine was, let alone the importance of the Ukraine.
Yeah, no idea where them was. And the sad part in all of this, and there's a lot of sadness, is that much of it comes back to nuclear weapons from the standpoint of, is in my book, certainly that's one of the subplots. You see Vladimir Putin rattling the nuclear weapons, rattling his nuclear weapons saber now. But back in 1994, the Ukraine was, I think, the world's third largest repository for nuclear weapons, in that they had much of the Soviet Union's old arsenal on their soil. And so in 1994, the Ukraine, Russia at the time, U.S. and U.K. got together, and the Ukrainians, with something called the Budapest Memorandum, gave up their nuclear weapons for assurances from the U.S. that we would safeguard their territorial integrity. And so back then, they gave up what you could argue is the one thing that would deter Russian aggression now, and they did it based on our guarantee. And so to me, that's a travesty. It's a travesty to the people of Ukraine that the United States gave its word as a sovereign nation that we would protect their territorial integrity if they gave up their nukes, and instead we had to sit by and watch as Russia invaded Ukraine. And so it really is a tragedy.
It's a terrible outcome. A lot of bad ideas.
Yeah.
Your book, you know, it's a timely book, and I think it will really help people to understand the situation, too. By reading this book, they'll get this in-depth understanding of the political situation. I'm sure that everybody will enjoy just the writing. You're great with dialogue, particularly. I mean, you're great with everything,
thank
but
you.
Your dialogue moves. There's not a wasted word in there. It's wonderful the way you write.
I appreciate you saying that. You know, writers approach the craft from different perspectives, but for me, I always hear the characters talking first, and oftentimes I start a chapter with that because that's what I hear as a writer, and so I spend a lot of time as a non-writer listening to how people talk, read a line of dialogue, and know which character's talking because it's distinctive. So I really appreciate you saying that, Patsy.
And I noticed that you did start your chapters with dialogue because I liked it, and it takes us right into the story. Sometimes people will tend to write like a long paragraph at the beginning of a chapter, and I like that you just jump into it. I noticed like in chapter 45, Ella starts, she says, "I've done many stupid things in my life." So the minute I read that opening line, I thought, yeah, you know, this is the way that people think, or this is the way that people talk, and you took us right into that story. So when she said, "I've done many stupid things in my life, none so stupid as this." I mean, you see, I could hear it in my head. I mean, this is a great accomplishment. And later on when you have Frito say, ETA 30 seconds, I like the way that you start these chapters. You take us into the story. We hear it in our heads. For me, of course, I visualize it as a film. So all around it works.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I really appreciate you saying that. And the other part of that, I think, comes from my time as a military officer, because when a battle is unfolding, the way you're tracking it in your middle of it is through radio transmissions. And so you're hearing bits of it, especially when I was an Apache pilot, we had four or five radios at the same time. That would be, you know, some would be to other aircraft, some would be to the guys on the ground, some would be to your commander. And so you really have to hear that and then form a picture in your head of what's happening based on what you're hearing. And I think that probably influenced my writing as well, because that's how I associate stories, is through dialogue and what people are saying.
I think you've done a great job with this book. It is book three in the Matt Drake novel. And I love Matt and I love his wife. I really do. They're really fantastic characters. And I see that Lee Child has given you a blurb for the front of the book. And really happy that I got to speak to you, because you're somebody I understand. A pilot is a pilot. And as you said, I had the restraint. But I did manage to get in there that I love guns, too. And I like the idea of the Glock. I'm very happy that she got one, because I think it's a good thing to have nowadays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a joy to talk with you, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for using the word joy in a sentence with me. That's wonderful. Well, Don Bentley, I think you're wonderful. I love the book. It's called Hostile Intent. And you have a website.
Yep. So everything in my series and the Clancy series, you can find information about on my website. It's donbentleybooks.com. So just D-O-N-B-E-N-T-L-E-Y books.com. Find me on social media, and it's at Bentley Don B, at B-E-N-T-L-E-Y-D-O-N-B, both at Twitter and Facebook. So I love, love, love hearing from readers. I'd love for you guys to stop by and check me out and tell me what you think of Hostile Intent.
Okay, and he has a newsletter too, folks. So get over there to his website and sign up for the newsletter, because if you haven't read a Matt Drake book yet, you better start, because you'll read this one first. As we said, it's very timely because it's got all about the Ukraine in it, and then you'll definitely go back and start at the beginning. Wonderful having you on the program today, Don.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye. All right, a pilot. I love pilots. What can I do? They're just so sweet. All right, what a book. What a book. Bye-bye.